This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Arif Roos, and as usual, this week, I have on the phone lines, Mr. Daniel Fernandez. Say hello.
Hello, Arif, and thank you for having me again on your show, week after week, despite, you know, Richard not liking what I say about him.
Yeah, he's run off quite some times already, Arif.
Yeah, so today he's not with us, eh?
No, he went on a break, well-deserved break, I think,
for
Richard Bradbury.
That's good.
Yeah. As usual, in our car show, Cruise Control, it will be split into two parts. So part one will be all about some news and a bunch of car launches as well. And then in part two, we will have a car review of a French car. And it is the DS7. That's going to be an interesting review. But for now, let's do the news. First off, as today is 14th October, as everybody knows, we have re-entered the CMCO. So if you've been living under a rock, the CMCO will last from 14th to 27th October, and it's gonna be enforced in KL, Selangor, and Putrajaya. We've been through this once before, but I think many people are still confused about the details of this. Am I right, Daniel?
Even I'm confused, because I give you an example. I live in Petaling Jaya, and tomorrow I need to go and see someone in Bukit Segambut.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out, am I going interstate or am I going cross boundary, or, you know, so I'm not sure whether I can go or not go.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it was even the same thing back then when the first CMCO was launched. Everybody was like, can we actually cross from KL to Selangor? And it turns out you could. There have been rumors today that actually you could cross from borderlines. But when I was stopped at a roadblock just now, they were asking a lot of people about, where did you come from? Oh. And as you know, Menarakan is right on the borderline of KL and Selangor. So it's quite easy just to accidentally get into Selangor, which is a very, very big problem.
Okay. So when you were stopped, what did they ask you?
They just asked where I'm going, where I came from. And yeah, pretty much that's it.
Oh, so the moment you said you're doing a show with me, they said you can carry on.
Yeah, your name carries weight. You know what I mean? Just to run through a bit of the details, because a lot of people have been confused. So, you know, taxi services, e-hailing, they all are operational from 6 a.m. to 12 a.m. with max of 2 passengers, about the same as back then. Public transport operates as usual, petrol stations 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. And only 2 people from each household will be able to get necessities. As Daniel mentioned just now, you know, any interstate travel will have to seek permission from PDRM. And at the moment, you know, KL Selangor is a bit of a grey area. But good news, if you're a cyclist, you still can cycle on the road whenever you want, just not on the highways. Well, one question I have, though, is will the car manufacturers or the car industry be affected by this again?
I don't think so, because why? If you want to buy a car, generally, you'll go somewhere within your neighborhood to buy a car, unless you're seeking a very specific model where there's only one showroom in the whole country. But
yeah.
I think people who want to buy very specific cars can wait out 2 weeks. 2 weeks is not like going to change your life.
Yeah.
You know, the only issue might be if you're buying a used car and you find a car you really like, which is in a different state. And yeah, this is when there's going to be some problem, because why? The guy selling might be desperate, or, you know, if you want to buy this and you want to make sure you get the car, you might be quick to say, okay, I'll put a deposit, and then you don't know if this guy is a scammer or, you know, whether the car is really in good condition. So you've got all these issues when it comes to secondhand cars buying from state to state.
That's true. Well, we have another story, and it's to do with Hyundai. And they have launched a new R&D center in Singapore called the Hyundai Motor Group Innovation Center, HMGICS. It's a very long name. And this is basically their second major facility in Southeast Asia. The first one was announced start of this year or end of last year. Nobody knows, really. But it was a major car plant in Indonesia, and they wanted to, you know, put their EV base in Indonesia. And now they have an R&D facility in Singapore. What can you tell me about this, Daniel?
Well, I can tell you one very, very important fact. It's not in Malaysia. This means no job opportunities in terms of even, you know, building the car later. Yeah. We're talking about construction of the facility, materials, hardware, contractors, workers. And then after that, when the facility is ready, you're talking about putting people in the factory to build cars. Apart from R&D, they're also going to be building cars to order. So basically, you can actually buy your car using your smartphone or buy it online. And you can track the construction, the build of your car, as it's going through the center, and then it's delivered to you. So it's a fantastic new development for Hyundai. And I think because the next generation are actually not going to be test driving cars anymore. They're just going to be buying online, watching a couple of videos, reading a couple of mile reviews, hopefully, and saying, okay, I think I want to buy this car. And then they just order it online. But the sad thing is, something like this should be in Malaysia because we have the infrastructure, we have cheaper land, we have the available labor. Here's the best part. Most of the labor that's going to be doing this in Singapore will probably be Malaysians.
In the press release of this, that the facility, the R&D facility in Singapore will be a global base,
right?
And I mean, it will be extremely extensive. So they're saying that the site will be completed in 2022. It aims to be a carbon neutral as part of Singapore's Smart Nation initiative, which is probably why they went there in the first place,
right?
We don't really offer packages like that. It's more ours, I guess, is more catered towards the digital industry, but this R&D facility will include IoT, Industry 4.0, all of that fancy stuff. But you mentioned customers will be able to order and customize a car through the app. But I think the best part of this is the fact that after you watch the car being built, when the car is being delivered, it actually goes straight up to the roof of the R&D building. The building is 7 stories tall. And what's on the roof of the 7-story building is a 620-meter oval test track. Sort of like the ones that Fiat has in Lingotto, Italy, as I found out. That one was a 1-kilometer oval track that Fiat in the 1920s used to test their cars all around those. So imagine, when you're in Singapore, you want to pick up delivery of your brand new Hyundai electric vehicle, and you go straight up to the roof and drive around with the Singapore skyline greeting you. It's quite interesting, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, it's a fantastic facility, fantastic opportunity for Singapore. Well done. Great news for them. Sad news for the Malaysian automotive industry.
Yeah. There is another bunch of news that I've been told is quite, shouldn't really be talked about yet. And it has to do with Kia and Peugeot and the fact that they might be coming under some new owners.
Yes.
We're not going to mention any of these details, but it presents quite a good opportunity to talk about what cars they should bring to the market that will be exciting for Malaysian consumers.
Exactly.
I think Kia's not doing that great since the Kia Sportage and the Sorento, started being dated.
We need the new ones here.
Yeah, and Peugeot's, disappeared off the map. You go on their Peugeot website and they only really sell two cars, which is the 3008 and the 5008.
Yes.
So, globally, these brands have a lot of cars that they don't bring here that they really should.
Right.
So what cars do you think they should bring here, Daniel?
Before that, I just want to add this. Both these companies actually have regional offices in Malaysia.
Oh.
Okay, so by getting a new brand owner to help out in distribution and sales and after sales and marketing and everything else means, I think the regional offices will definitely want to bring in new exciting products to start getting noticed more. You see, they used to be very popular some time ago.
Yeah.
But their popularity has slowly sort of, diminished in Malaysia and overshadowed by other brands coming in very strong. So if you ask me, with the changes in the whole global way of looking at things and, emissions and everything else, Kia should be thinking about bringing in the Niro. It's a compact MPV. There's an electric version. I think that is what should be coming in here. They've already introduced it in Singapore. I saw it at the Singapore Motor Show last year. And then, of course, the new Sorento must come in. It's a beautiful looking SUV.
Beautiful car, yeah.
And then we need the Optima back,
I agree. Yeah. The new one is very, very impressive, or so I've heard.
Yes, and it looks almost like the car we all want to own, the Stinger.
Yes, right. Okay, the Stinger has been here for roughly 2 years, but they only brought like 10 units, if I remember correctly.
I've only seen one on the road.
Me too. And I think the only version that they brought in was the 3.3 V6, which nobody could really afford to buy because 3.3 liters in our road tax is basically you're shooting yourself in the foot.
And also it's fully imported, so it's not cheap.
Yeah. There is this other Kia that I thought would be interesting for us, and it's the Kia Ceed.
Oh, that's a very attractive vehicle, yes.
Yeah, and they have a wagon version as well.
Yes.
That's very, very nice. But it's only a European design car, right?
So the Kia Ceed and the Proceed, even though they've been around for years, but they're European only. So for them to come into Malaysia, it'll be too expensive. Even if you get the best tax concession, it'll just be too expensive because it's made in Europe, so it's got a European price tag. What you need to concentrate on is Kias that come out of India and Korea.
Yeah, fair enough. What about the Peugeots, though?
Oh, Peugeots. I like the 208, the little compact hatchback. I like the 2008, the little crossover. You know,
yeah.
This is something. Yeah. These are two vehicles can actually compete very closely with our national cars. Because why? The 2008 can go right against the X15 from Proton, mm-hmm. and the 208 can go right against the Produa Myvi.
Yeah, honestly, I was thinking, if I think about buying a 208, I would actually pit it against the Mazda 2. And at the moment, the 208 looks like a much better package than the Mazda 2.
And in Europe, they have a very basic version. And, you know, all you need is the basic version here to get started.
Oh, and don't forget, they also have an electric version and a hybrid version.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Right. Obviously, Peugeot already has the 3008 here, but the other three cars that I think they should bring here, we spoke about it last week, for a bit, is the 508. The 508 sedan, the wagon.
Very attractive.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? The D segment, the Honda Accord segment. I think everything's starting to look the same, and I feel like the Peugeot 508 will definitely stand out amongst the crowd.
Yes,
right?
Yes, you're right.
Anyway, let's do some car launches since we're already talking about cars.
Correct.
And yesterday, just before, you know, the CMCO happened, Honda managed to actually launch the brand new Honda City 2021.
Yes.
So what can you tell me about it, Daniel?
Oh, have you got 3 hours? I'll make it very brief. Number one, you got a brand new 1.5-liter petrol VTEC engine. It's good for 119 horsepower and 145 newton meters of torque. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, you know, why is it only 1.5 liters? Why is it only 119? Remember that this Honda Cities are not designed to be luxury cars, number one. Not to be super fast cars, not to hit above 100,000 ringgit. These are cars for, I would say, low middle class and middle class Malaysians to get, you know, a little bit of everything in one neat little package. And the Honda City has never failed to entertain Malaysians with whatever, over the years.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've got four variants, but we're going to talk about three first. Why these three? Because these three variants carry the same 1.5 liter VTEC petrol engine. You got first the City S, which is 76,000 ringgit. Halogen lights, LED running lights. It all comes with rear aircon vents. It's got four airbags. It's a decent little sedan. I think it'll make the national cars a little bit worried, because why? It's slightly more than the Myvi high spec, and it's slightly more than the Proton Persona high spec.
So I have a question about the rear aircon vents, because I think this is the first car in this segment that actually has rear aircon vents.
Yes, yes. So then you have the City E, which is the next level up. Now that's a big boost in price, almost 8,000 ringgit to 84,800. But what do you get? You get remote engine start, which the Honda Civic has, which you can stand away from the car. Say you're at your favorite tea stall and your car is parked 10 feet away from you, or, you know, 10 meters away from you, and the car must be locked. You can start the car, get the engine running, get the car cooled down, the aircon will be running, and then maybe 5 minutes later, pay your bill and walk over to the car, and the car is nice and cool. Nice little feature to have. You also get an 8-inch infotainment system with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Of course, you have rearview camera, auto climate control, cruise control, and paddle shifters. This, I think, is going to be one of the best-selling variants because it's got a little bit of everything, yet it's only 84,800 ringgit. Then comes the City V. This is supposed to be the highest spec of the petrol variant. Now, it's only 4,000 ringgit more. Sorry, it's only about 5,000 ringgit more. But you got LED headlights, you got fog lamps, you got 16-inch wheels, you got leather upholstery, Honda Lane Watch, six airbags. So a lot of people will say, hey, you know, I'm taking a 7-year loan. It's 5,000 ringgit more. Should I go a bit higher? Now, if you really need all these little extra toys, of course, the Honda Lane Watch has extra safety features and additional two airbags. But if you really need it, then why not? Now, we've done with all the petrol versions. Let's talk about the Honda City RS.
This is a very interesting car.
Okay. So this is, in fact, it's a bit difficult to explain, but the easiest way for me to explain this is actually an electric car.
Okay, yeah.
So when you start the car, you have an electric motor working for you with a battery system and everything else. But there's an engine inside, a very small engine inside. And that engine is basically to charge up the battery.
That's a very interesting thing. Because
do you get what I mean? Because a lot of people are a little bit, even I was confused initially, but you get what I mean, right?
I think what can be confusing to a lot of people is, like, you know, when people think of hybrids, they think of the version where you have to plug in your car overnight, right? Plug-in hybrids.
No.
But this one, no. No, you would have to The engine is basically a generator that powers the car, the electric motors, right?
The petrol engine, the little petrol engine, is basically charging your car constantly when you need to. So when the battery comes to a certain level where it's a little bit weak, petrol engine will kick in automatically to charge it up. And then once it's charged up, it will, of course, shut down. So you're mostly using battery power than using petrol power. So you're actually going to be saving quite a bit of fuel. Now, I don't want to go so much into this technology because I've not test driven it yet. Mm. And I just want people to understand this. Number one, this is the first ever type of engine technology for the world. The launch was done in Malaysia. It's a global launch for this model, which is called the Honda City RS EHEV. So Malaysia is the first to get it. So we asked the head of Honda in Malaysia, and we asked him, why Malaysia first? He said, well, Malaysians have been buying more hybrid Hondas than anybody else in the region.
That is true. I mean, you go into any used car website and then you search, for example, Honda Jazz, literally everything is a hybrid version.
Exactly. So the other impressive thing about this new engine, this RS-EHEV engine, is it's got 180 brake horsepower, which might not sound like a lot, but it's got 253 Newton meters of torque.
Yeah.
So what that means, you've got the same acceleration and mid-range power delivery of a car between 2 to 2.5 liters.
Yeah, that has the same amount of torque as my car.
Exactly. So you've got this compact little sedan, which is quite spacious, nicely put together. The interior has got leather and it's got nice stitching on the dashboard. I mean, it's a premium little car. Now, the strange thing is, yesterday, Honda did not reveal the price of this car.
Probably because it has to go through all of those taxation things.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, they're trying to get the EV certification and everything else. But a lot of people ask me online. I mean, this whole morning, I was answering a lot of people online. What would I think the price to be, you know, when it's launched? At the moment, the most expensive version is 86,561.45, which is with the sales tax included. Sorry, they've got 5,000 bookings. So by the time they fill up that 5,000 bookings, it'll go back to its normal price, which is 89,900. So we're looking at the City RS coming probably January, February next year. That time, there'll be no sales tax.
Yeah.
So my guess, the price will be below 100,000 ringgit.
Yeah.
To make it more interesting, I think the price will be between 95,800 to 98,800.
It will present a very good problem for consumers, I think, because people will look at the Proton X50, the top level, and then they'll look at the CTRS, like, do I really need to get a crossover? Yeah. Kind of the same size.
Yeah. And I think now both these companies are playing the, I watch and see who will do it first, release the price. You see, if the Proton X50 high spec comes in at more than 98,800, which is my guess for the City RS, I think Honda will say, we got a good price. But if the Proton X50 high spec, the top version, comes in at, say, 93 or 94,000 ringgit, then I still think the Honda City RS at 98 is not too bad, because in a seven-year loan, the difference in your monthly installment will just be 50 to 80 ringgit. So what's the big deal?
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. This is a really cool proposition from Honda. I think it's going to be a really big car. If it doesn't sell a lot, I doubt it won't. But if it doesn't, just because of the motor and the spec of the car, is probably going to revolutionize that segment or so, I hope.
Yeah.
We are out of time for this part of this show. We will continue with another small saloon, but this time it's for the middle class. And we'll talk about that right after the break. So, this has been Cruise Control on BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, this is Cruise Control, the car show on BFM. My name is Arif Roos, and, well, on the phone line with me is Mr. Daniel Fernandez. Say hello.
Hello, Arif. Hello, listeners.
So, just now before the break, we had a bit of news where we spoke a little bit about Hyundai's new R&D center in Singapore. We provided a little bit of details about what you should know as about the CMCO rules, and we created a wish list of some sort of what Kia and Peugeot might want to do. when they sort themselves out.
Yes.
Before the break, we spoke about the Honda City, which was a very affordable small saloon. But now we gotta talk about the BMW 2 Series Grand Coupe, which is BMW's baby saloon. So no longer is the BMW 3 Series the smallest saloon that you can buy. And the model that BMW Malaysia brought in is the 218i M Sport. And it starts at a very, very good price, I think. 211,000 ringgit with 5-year unlimited mileage and 5-year free service. So that seems to be quite a good package, don't you think?
It is a good package. But when we had a closer look at the car, I mean, you know, 1.5 liter turbo 3-cylinder engine, that's fine. That's no issue with that, because why? The X1 has that engine, you know. Mercedes A-Class sedan also has a 1.5 liter 3-cylinder engine. So it's fine, because all the Europeans are reducing their carbon footprint. They're getting smaller engines, putting in bigger turbos, giving enough power for people to have a bit of fun. But my question is this. This car at the back, it's really tiny.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a tall person. I'm not a basketball player. But, you know, when I sat inside, I went to the showroom, I sat inside, my head was already touching the rear roof line. And I thought to myself, you know, and my short height and this car is not fitting me very well. Maybe it's more for single people or people with just small kids. But then again, you know, it's a small BMW. I can understand that. But I still think that that sloping roof line should have been thought about, because the Europeans are not small size.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I remember they were saying that this is traditionally intended for the Asian markets, because I remember a while ago, I think it was maybe 3 years ago, they launched the 1 Series sedan or something like that in China.
Yes.
And this is sort of like a continuation to that, but it looks slightly better, and they just recalled it. Renamed it as a 2 Series Grand Coupe.
Yes.
But I get what you're saying, though, because the 1 Series itself, it feels bigger because the roof line is very flat.
Yes.
This Grand Coupe, it's sloping all the way down.
But I have to add, it is a good-looking car.
It is, it is. It looks much better in the flesh than it does in BMW's press photos.
Yes. And I'm sure, sorry to interrupt, but I'm sure a lot of people will just go in, sit in the driver's seat, play around with all the features, then say, yes, I'm taking it. Because you know why? I can finally afford a BMW.
I agree. And Malaysia's obsession with sedans continues, right?
Yes.
Anyway, this car's specifications is, like Daniel said, 1.5 liter turbo 3-cylinder. It's the same engine that they put in the X1, the same engine that they put in the old 118i. So 138 horsepower, 220 newton meters of torque, 8.7 seconds to 100 kilometers an hour. They spec'd it quite well, so you still get the digital instrument display in front of you, and then you still have the iDrive system, which was the previous generation iDrive system, which is the better one. You can subscribe to CarPlay and Android Auto next year, but I heard the cost is roughly in four figures, so you're going to have to think much about that. In terms of other specifications, you get 6 basic speakers, a dual zone climate, power sport seats with thigh support, which is really nice, reverse camera, leather seats, and a driving assistant package, which we criticized BMW for not bringing into their smaller cars back then. But now you get most of the safety suites. So that's pretty nice.
Yeah. But my only issue, a little bit of my issue, I mean, I don't know if you realize this, this car competes directly with the Mercedes A200 sedan, right?
Yeah.
That's also a 3-cylinder turbocharged engine, 1332cc, 7-speed gearbox. But that car produces 30 brake horsepower more.
Well, in the BMW community, this engine is notorious for being underreported, apparently.
Really? They say 138, whereas the Mercedes is 163. Then they say 220 newton meters. That's good torque. But the Mercedes gives you 250 newton meters, you know? and the selling price of both vehicles are almost the same. The Mercedes is just a little bit more. But anyway, it's a difference between, you know, you want a Pointer Star or you want a BMW badge.
Exactly. Anyway, I think we should start doing our review this week, which is the brand new DS7 Crossback. And it's a 1.6 liter engine, is it not?
Yes. Now, first of all, a little bit of history on DS. A lot of people will be saying, what's DS, right?
Yeah, I actually don't know what it stands for.
Okay, now what it stands for, we'll come to later. But DS is basically, when it first started, DS was actually a car that was made by Citroën many, many years ago in 1955. It was one of the most beautiful cars made. Till today, it's still a gorgeous car. It came with so many world's firsts at that time. And it was ahead of the Germans and everybody else for many years. And then that name just disappeared and no one even talked about it. Even Citroën, the PSA group, never talked about it.
This was a DS that I think it debuted like the hydraulic suspension where you could lower it and raise it, right?
Correct. Self-leveling suspension, which they call the magic carpet ride. Now, in 2009, someone in Citroen said, hey, you know, Toyota has got Lexus, Honda has got Acura in US, Nissan has got Infiniti, which are all luxury brands for these cars. So why can't we, Citroen, have a luxury brand? So they said, okay, what are we going to call it? So some genius there said, instead of reimagining everything, let's call it DS. So what does DS mean for them right now? Two words, different spirit.
Different spirit.
Yes. But some people say it stands for distinctive series. So I'm going to go with the second one, distinctive series.
Yeah, the first different spirit didn't really have the, you know.
The ring is not there, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, here comes the DS brand. So the DS brand has had a few cars recently, I mean in the last few years, but recently they decided it's time to get into the SUV market. So the first SUV for the DS brand is this DS7 Crossback, which we test drove a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now, the DS7 Crossback, because Citroen owns DS and they're all part of the PSA family, and the PSA family owns Peugeot. So this is sitting on the Peugeot 3008 platform.
Okay. So sorry, this DS7 is about the same size as the CX-5?
No, it's slightly bigger than the CX-5. It's actually the same size as a Renault Koleos.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
It's a big car.
Big car. It's got a lot of space. It's actually even about the same size as a Mercedes GLC.
Okay.
Which sells for about 300,000 ringgit. It's about the same size of a BMW X3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but now the problem with the DS7, it's called a DS7 Crossback, is because it's so obscure, so unheard of. I mean, even when I put the review up on DSF, so many people had still not heard of this car.
They might have thought that you built a car.
Exactly. DS7, DSF, you know. So when we took it out for a test drive, we were not expecting anything special, but I must tell you, look at the interior of this car, and that's when the real wow factor comes in.
Agreed. You know? Totally agree.
Alcantara everywhere, soft touch materials, real stitching on the seats. I mean, a proper thread. You can actually feel it with your fingers. Even the plastic on the steering wheel, you know, the center boss and everything else, it feels premium. What they did was, to me, the guys at DS said, since we're going to use the Peugeot 3008 platform, fine, bring it along. But we're going to strip out the interior and we're just going to rework the whole interior to make this car so special that anyone, male, female, tall, short, young, old, when they walk into this car, they'll go, whoa, what's up?
Yeah, that's an interesting point because I didn't really know how to or what to think about this interior because Alcantara everywhere and it looks very, very sporty. But then again, it doesn't. Well, I don't know how to say this. It looks very, very sporty because of the materials and all these sharp edges, but it doesn't try to be sporty. It's just luxurious and avant-garde.
Yes, that's the word, avant-garde.
Yeah.
And you know, the whole thing flows so well. They've done it so well. And to make things even more distinctive, they've gone and put a BRM analog clock on the center dash.
Just for a touch of class.
Just like what Maserati does with their clocks and, you know, some other premium brands. Mm-hmm. So that makes a whole bit of difference. And then you got the start-stop button below it, which has got the DS word on it, you know, the DS logo on it. So the interior, I mean, I can talk all on and on about it. Oh, I cannot forget the Focal Electra Hi-Fi audio system that it comes with this car. Audio systems are just audio systems in cars. I'm an audio buff, but I like it at home, not in my car.
Yeah.
But this system for this vehicle, whoa, very, very nicely put together. 14 speakers delivering really good sound across the cabin.
14 speakers. We haven't talked about the price, but I mean, for the kit, it sounds...
And then you start up the car, you drive it, and then you realize if you've driven any of the new Peugeots, the 3008 or the 5008, it's almost the same. Almost the same. I think it's just the engine note, and because the engine note could be an exhaust system or it could be, you know, insulation, apart from that, it's exactly the same as the 3008. So you get a 1.6 engine, turbocharged, a decent 165 horses and a torque of 240 newton meters that comes in very low at 1,400 RPM. But you've got 19-inch alloy wheels on this car. So you do feel a little bit of, you know, delay in the acceleration. And then safety system, Euro 5-star, it's got every single safety system that you want. Apple to apple, it competes with all the German rivals in every single area except in terms of power.
That's the thing, right? Because we just spoke about the Honda City just now and it's got, what, 119 horsepower?
Yes.
I was thinking that's really all we need. We don't need to go faster than that.
Exactly.
And especially the BMW X3, the GLC, they have the smaller engine one, but I don't think it will be as efficient as a 1.6 liter engine.
Yes.
Especially this.
And I like the fact that it's using a simple 6-speed manual override gearbox. Because why? You don't need an 8-speed or 9-speed or 10-speed gearbox. A 6-speed will be good enough because that's not a lot of power to play with. Mm-hmm. You know, now the 0 to 100 dash is about 8.9 seconds. It's good enough for the city. Top speed is rated at 206. We took it up to 160 on a deserted highway. I know it's past the illegal speed. People are going to be angry at me, but listen, I just wanted to try and see sound insulation for a few minutes. And up to 160, I couldn't hear anything, just a little bit of wind noise. That means this car is beautifully insulated, well built, you know?
It sounds like to me that the DS7 is a Peugeot turned up to 11.
Yes.
It's like a Lexus, what a Lexus is to Toyota, you know, everything's just done differently.
Yeah, like people will say, oh, the Camry and the Lexus ES250 are so similar. Yes, they share a lot of things, but when you get into the Lexus, it's totally different. And then, you know, the build quality and the leather and the materials, everything are much, much better. That is why there's a huge price gain. So with this car, with this SUV, there's also a price gain next to the Peugeot. Now, the Peugeot comes in at about 140,000 ringgit.
That's for the 5008?
That's for the 3008, which is a 5-seater, and this is a 5-seater, okay? Now, this vehicle comes in at 259,000 ringgit.
Quite a big jump.
Quite a big jump. Now, here's a surprising thing. When they launched it a year ago, it was 199,000 ringgit, which was just 60,000, about 60,000 more expensive than the 3008.
Yeah, so what happened in between that?
I don't know, because why? Initially, when they launched it, I was talking to the salespeople, 40, 50 units were sold out very quickly. After that, another 10, 20 units just trickled along. And then now it's slowly come to a very slow 1 to 2 units here and there because the price jumped by 60,000 ringgit. So now it is 120,000 more ringgit than the Peugeot 3008.
Yeah.
Now, if you ask me, I will just go and buy the Peugeot 3008, take it to my interior guy, give him a blank check, give him a check for 10,000 ringgit and say, okay, listen, do you think you can cover it with Alcantara? He'll say yes. Okay?
Mm.
Then I'll go to my audio guy, give him another 10,000 ringgit and say, okay, give me the best focal sound system that you can put into this car. Then I'll give another guy a 10,000 ringgit to just put in some evil-looking rims and some nice, trendy tires, you know? And then I've got myself almost a DS.
But it isn't a DS.
Exactly. So either you want a DS or you want something that's almost a DS.
Yeah. Well, okay, maybe 60,000 ringgit jump from 199,000 to 259. I don't know. I didn't really read up about the specs back then, but this seems like, you know, they tick every single box because, like you said, you know, 14 speakers, you don't get that many speakers. You don't get it in a 530E.
Correct.
I'll just put it that way. Yeah. So before we go into the 7-point inspection, do you have anything else you want to add about this?
I just want to say this. Take it for a test drive. I mean, no obligation. You can go into the showroom. It's on along Federal Highway in Petaling Jaya. There's only one DS showroom in Malaysia.
Mm.
Go in there, talk to the salespeople. They're very nice. They're very eager to talk to people because they don't get a lot of business. Take the car for a test drive. And then you suddenly see, you know, I look at it differently. Don't compare it with the Peugeot. Compared with the German rivals, the German rivals are all 50 to 60,000 more expensive with less kit inside. So you might say, this is European, the Germans are European. I should put it side by side and say, listen, why pay 300, 310, 320, 330 for a German SUV when I can buy this for 259, fully loaded, and it's so unique on the road, most people will not even recognize it.
And it's one of those rare cars that looks really good in black.
It does. And you know, that design, correct me if I'm wrong, 10 years from now, it still would not look dated.
I agree. I'm willing to place a bet on that.
Okay.
Actually, how much is the Lexus Harrier or RX350?
The RX is 260,000.
It's about the same price, isn't it?
It's about the same price.
I have a feeling that if somebody sat in this car, they could be swayed from the RX300.
Very true. But you must remember that the Toyota Harrier or the Lexus version, they have a 2-liter turbocharged engine. There's a bit more power.
That's true.
So that'll be the push, a little bit of the push.
Okay, so shall we do the 7-point inspection?
Why not?
To recap, what was the price?
259 888.
Who are its competitors?
Okay, its competitors will be the BMW X3, the Audi Q5, the Mercedes GLC 200, the Toyota Harrier, and the Lexus NX 200 Turbo.
Very, very competitive. In terms of pricing, do you think it's priced competitively?
Against all this, it is priced very competitively, but it's sad to say a bit of an underdog.
Questions 4 and 5 together. What's great about it and what's not so great about it?
What's really great about it is the fact that when I get into that interior, immediately I can feel the money I paid for. From the seat comfort, to the sound insulation, to the audio system, to the touch and feel points. I mean, if you open the doors and if you're giving the ride to some relative or friend or girlfriend, boyfriend, whoever, the moment you open the doors and they see that interior, they'll say, whoa, this is a $300,000 car. My word, this is beautiful, you know? When you start driving it and then that 1.6 engine, you know, in this segment, everybody else is more powerful.
Yeah.
So to me, they should have thought about either putting in a 2-liter turbo or playing with the turbocharger in this vehicle and giving it at least 195 brake horsepower and 280 newton meters of torque to be almost on par with the immediate rivals.
Yeah, I mean that's I think the downside that I will agree with, because I don't know. I mean, looking at the stats, 165 horsepower, 240 newton meters of torque, 4-cylinder turbo. It sounds like an engine that was more powerful when it was put in the 208 GTI or something.
Yes, correct,
like that, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Question number 6, what type of buyers will this car appeal to? Because it's not really that popular, but it's I think perfectly priced to grab people from the Germans and everybody else.
Yes, I'm glad you asked me this question, because why? When I was test driving it, I bumped into a person I know. And because the car was tinted, he didn't know he was driving the car. So when I got down, he looked at me and said, whoa, you bought this car? I said, I bought this car. And he says, wow, this car looks really special. This is just the exterior. And you can see from the pictures, it's black with black everything. So you have to be really, you know, into cars to appreciate all the little features on the exterior. And I said, come, let's have a look. And I opened the door, he looked inside, he said, wow, this is the kind of car I want to own. But how much is it? I said, I just joked with him. I said, it's about 300,000. Hey, that's not too bad. Because if I buy a Mercedes or a BMW and Audi, everybody's got one, you know?
Yeah.
If I drive this, I'm totally out of the, you know, out at the top end of the field, away from all the rest.
Yeah.
So I can see there will be people. And I think that's the first bunch of customers that bought this car. They just want to stand out from the rest.
I would. And I don't really think of myself as somebody who want to show off my car.
Yeah, but you know, you're a celebrity at BFM, so you have to go with that flow.
Okay, so a lot was spoken about the style and the appearance of this car. So this last question, I thought the Mini Cooper S Countryman costs roughly about the same, 260, 270.
Right.
And it's kind of a style icon too. I do understand it's a bit smaller, or rather a lot smaller than this DS7, but you know, which, if you were thinking about a car that was stylish, which one would you get?
It's very difficult, because the Mini is a driver's car. It's got much more power. It's got great handling. It's it's a point and shoot kind of vehicle, even though it's a Countryman. And the Mini is also very, very iconic. You can spot it a mile away. People who drive Minis are like people who walk around with a scuba gear, you know? They want to be noticed. They want people to point and say, hey, you know, I've seen you. People who drive a car like this are a little bit more discreet, a little bit more classy, a little bit more, you know, the Mini is someone who's wearing an Armani suit, and this one is someone who's wearing a Hugo Boss suit. There's less flash in it, you know?
Yeah.
I can understand you putting it side by side because of the price and all the convenience features and, you know, the interior cabin amenities and all that, but it's two different games. It's two animals, two very different animals.
Well, that was Daniel's really super interesting review about brand new DS7 Crossback. Any last words?
I will just say this. DS is not going to sell in huge numbers. It's not going to be something that you're going to see on the road every day. But if you want something to really stand out, get the DS7 Crossback in red color. Because I've seen one in red and it's yummy.
Well, as Daniel mentioned, it is a very, very pretty car. I haven't seen one in red yet, but it's even in black, it stands out. But you just heard the car review of the DS7 Crossback. And before that, we spoke about the BMW 2 Series Grand Coupe, the Honda City, which is a very, very big launch. And we had a little bit of news about Hyundai's new R&D center in Singapore, the CMCO, and how Kia and Peugeot might be able to change their fortunes by introducing some interesting cars. If you want to read this car review, you can visit esf.my. We also have an Instagram account at BFM Cruise Control. You can visit there for some weekly news and articles. My name is Arif Roos. Say goodbye, Daniel.
Bye-bye, and thank you again for having me on the show.
And this has been Cruise Control on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.